I call him my friend. Family and loved ones, to rise up against my real killers, the U.S. government.
Your foreign policy of intervention in Iraq was supposed to be for the preservation of American lives and interests. So why is it that I'm having to pay the price of your interference with my life?
It's the worst possible scenario for a war correspondent, ending your life as a sick publicity stunt for some terrorist group in a godforsaken corner of the world. The tragic beheadings of American journalists in Iraq underscore the seriousness of the problem. In many places around the world, kidnapping is becoming the terrorists' weapon of choice. But it isn't just terrorists who are getting into the game. Every day, people around the globe face the threat of being taken hostage.
It's a cash industry. It's a great business model. There are many criminal organizations that will invest in the kidnapping. It's so profitable, like you're buying a stock, and they're expecting returns on investment.
The motivation is usually money, but not always. In the 1980s and 90s, the country of Colombia became infamous for taking kidnapping to a new level of brutality.
Whoever got in my way would die. Wherever I walked, people would bow their heads. During that time, I always did what I wanted. At the time, I wanted to do it.
At the beginning of this millennium, in 2000, 2001, 2002, the figures were shocking with regards to kidnapping. We had 3,500, 3,400 kidnappings each year that we are covering.
In Cali, Colombia, the crime rate got so bad that drive-by assassinations by motorcycle were a daily occurrence. A city ordinance was passed that forbids two men from riding together. In this city, kidnapping was much more than just a way for criminals to raise money. It became a frighteningly effective way to influence the political process or get revenge.
Sometimes you kidnap to make money, but it was also a way to intimidate and go after your enemies, to make them pay for what they did to you. It's like the law of the jungle, only the strongest survive.
Welcome to Cali, Colombia. About 10 years ago, this was probably the kidnapping capital of the planet. They had the number of kidnappings in the thousands per year. But they've made a big difference in that number by putting some time and effort into fixing the problem with a lot of help from the United States. So we came here to find out how they did it.
The United States has helped with training. We lack training. We were helping in training in various points of view, such as interview techniques, the use of technical equipment, especially intercepting radio frequencies, cellular interception, interception of landphone lines, and we started doing more important work from which has yielded the results we have today.
There were sort of two things occurring down there. One was kidnapping of almost anybody, particularly people of wealth, for ransom. It was thuggery, it was a money-making deal, it was almost like, you know, the mafia or something. And then the other was the kidnapping of people by the FARC for not only the money, but also for political purposes. It was a big problem.
Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin served as the commander of the U.S. Army's Super Secret Counterterrorism Unit, Delta Force.
The concept behind the Delta Force was to be able to run these kinds of missions and give the local host government credit for it, and conceal, it's called low visibility operations, conceal the U.S. hand and the U.S. involvement in these operations. And I think over time, we've gotten more and more adept at doing that.
In 1998, the United States made a major commitment to Colombia to try and help them stem the flow of cocaine coming north out of this country. They called it Plan Colombia, and they dedicated billions of dollars to helping stop the flow of drugs. Part of that was providing signals intelligence, that is, flying airplanes over the jungle and trying to find narco traffickers and guerrillas hiding out there. One of those missions went horribly wrong in 2003, and that led to one of the most high-profile kidnapping cases in Colombia's history.
Three gentlemen were working for a development government contractor, had a contract of drug interdiction in Colombia. Had a mechanical failure in an aircraft, and the aircraft crashed in an area which was known to be held by the FARC.
The Americans that were kidnapped because they were Americans and because they were there working for the U.S. government. So now the government has a responsibility to try and rescue these people. How do we get intelligence on these people? You know, first of all, these people are fairly low tech. They don't have a huge electronic signature, so you're not going to get a great deal on signals intelligence. You'll get some, but how do you find them? Well, it's the oldest technique in the world. And that is, you find them with human intelligence.
A series of intelligence activities and research was initiated to locate the place of captivity and be able to carry out a liberation, execute a rescue operation to free them. We impersonated Gorilla to say that we were going to transfer them from one place to another.
After nearly 7 years in captivity, Americans Keith Stansel, Mark Gonsalves, and Thomas Howes, along with 15 others, are finally able to go home.
The rescue of these people is achieved, and there wasn't not one single shot was fired, and all of the hostages were unharmed.
Was this an American or a Colombian operation that rescued these people in 2008? Big question. And the answer is yes, it was. And I think we can assess that it was both. It was a Colombian face on this operation, and we've got to give the Colombians credit, a very courageous and, I think, a very well thought out rescue operation where they actually arrived at the camp under a ruse and then were able to bring home 15 people. We should never assume that we can't be kidnapped. So it doesn't matter whether you are a businessman with one of the Fortune 500 companies, or whether you're a student that's on summer vacation, or whether you're just there as a missionary trying to bring a message to the people, don't think there's any safe places in the world, because there are not.
You know, making this piece about kidnapping has kind of got me thinking. Dennis and I spend so much time in countries like this, places where kidnapping is really the only growth industry. Maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea if we went and got some training to make sure that we don't become the next victims. And I think I know just the people to talk to. Well, it's been a while since I've been flex cuffed like this at a cheap hotel, but the reason we're here today is that we're attending a 3-day course offered by On Point Tactical. It's called Urban Evasion and Escape. And it's meant for business executives and people that travel overseas like me to teach us what to do if we ever get captured overseas. Here I'm flex cuffed, as you can see, and I'm gonna try and break these things with some paracord I've got connected to my shoes. So, that was pretty easy. We sat through 2 days of classroom training. We also learned some very valuable skills.
And the movement is towards your wrist. All I'm doing is putting it under tension and rock. And you look at that and go, wow, there's no way I can escape. I mean, I feel that feels really tight, right? You can do that one.
Really? I feel like Superman.
Over the last couple days, we've learned how to get out of handcuffs and pick locks and all sorts of good information that we might need to know as we travel overseas. Today is the final exercise. I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but I think it's going to be interesting. The exercise begins with a simulated kidnapping. I'm taken to a room in the hotel and have a pillowcase taped over my head. They dump water on me. Then the real fun begins.
Ow. What are you doing here?
I'm just a tourist.
Ow. I know this is all a game, but the taser sure feels like the real thing. The wet pillowcase makes it hard to breathe.
I don't know anything. I'm just a tourist.
My abductors leave, promising more torture when they return. I have to escape, but I'm really worried I won't be able to get the handcuffs off. But then the training kicks in.
All right, let's get out of here. Come on, come on.
We're gonna run through the Walmart.
In some ways, doing this exercise in a major American city makes it easier.
I want to go out a different door than I came in, so I'm going to go out through the service center here.
I speak the language, know the culture, but so do my pursuers. And they know what I look like.
All right, so I got to change my appearance somehow. We cashed some clothes last night, and we're going to change our appearance a little bit and pose as skateboarders. First thing I got to do is get rid of this old man mustache here. So, things gotta go.
Transition complete.
And now,
the skateboarder. We made our way from the outskirts of town to the Las Vegas Strip, about 12 miles. The skateboards came in very handy. So did the local bus system. But when you're being chased, everyone looks suspicious.
That guy over at the bus station seemed like he was paying a little bit too much attention to us.
We were given various tasks to accomplish throughout the day. Finding a weapon, picking a lock. By late afternoon, we got the signal to bring it in. Mission accomplished.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. Good disguise, good cover.
Thank you.
These are the kind of skills a man hopes he never needs to use. But for all the places we go, I'm very glad to have learned them.
Wow.
Colonel, I want you to know it took me a full week to grow my beard back.
I wasn't impressed by that. I was impressed by the skateboarding. Didn't even recognize it was you until you got grabbed it right there at the end.
That was a very interesting class. But, you know, what I'd like to do is I want to ask you about your experience. You know, kidnapping is not a new phenomenon, and you had a lot of experience with that back in the 80s.
Well, kidnapping and holding others for ransom of some kind or extortion is certainly not new on this planet. It goes all the way back to ancient times. In the 1980s, my job consisted, among other things, of dealing with the families of those that have been kidnapped. First one I had to deal with was a U.S. Army general kidnapped in Italy by the Red Brigades. Very interesting operation in that we did not have, at the time, the Rewards for Justice program that we have today that you and I have covered out in the Philippines and elsewhere. What we had was a president who wanted that general freed. Ronald Reagan became president of the United States because 56 Americans had been kidnapped and held hostage by the Iranian revolutionaries for 444 days. So he was not about to have hostages. And so I was sent with $1 million donated by a private American citizen to Naples, Italy. That $1 million was allowed us to post notices all over Italy that said $1 million reward for information leading to the safe recovery of General James Dozier.
So I was going to say, I mean, didn't the government say back then, we don't negotiate, we don't pay ransoms?
Well, but we don't pay ransoms, and we didn't then, and a lot of people have a lot of debates about things I had to do to get other Americans freed, but we'll negotiate with anybody. Ronald Reagan says that repeatedly, but we won't make concessions to terrorists is the difference. And of course, we now have laws on the books that say no one can make a payment to a terrorist organization, whether it's a reward for information, you just can't do it. So it's unlawful. In Dozier's case, one of the Red Brigade's terrorists actually ratted out his buddies. An operation was put together. I know you've had others on this broadcast that I know well. They were part of a U.S. government special operations unit. We'll leave the names out of it, but some folks have already seen him here this evening. And that unit was sent back to Italy, immediately took down the place that the Red Brigade's rat had turned out, and General Dozier was freed, and we gave all the full credit to the Carabinieri. Turns out the one wrinkle in this entire thing was that the guy who ratted him out thought he was going to get $1 million reward and move his family to Brooklyn. Well, it turns out he'd also was wanted for another crime, and that was the murder of Aldo Moro, the former prime minister. So the Carabinieri didn't want us to give the $1 million reward to him. He went to jail. The money sat in the vault at the U.S. Embassy until I went back and got it and returned it to the individual who Ronald Reagan had already thanked for the operation. His question to me at the back end of it was, well, why didn't you invest it? Because it was gone for several months.
Because you didn't get any interest.
There's no interest gained on it. Now, there are those who are held today like we've seen with Foley and Sokolov at the very beginning. There are ways of getting them freed. There are things that can be done. I take this as a case in point, the Beirut hostages. We tried every diplomatic means possible. We went to every government that would talk to us, to include Arab governments. We know that we got three of them freed through the intervention of the Iranian government. We didn't deal with the actual kidnappers. We dealt with those who had some suasion and control over them in Tehran. There are those that have hold that to be in great controversy. I understand that. One of the most difficult things anyone could ever be asked to do, and that is to deal directly with the families of those who've been kidnapped. Obviously, it's terrible to be one of them.
Absolutely. Well, knowing your experience in this issue, I can tell you one thing. My wife has your phone number on her speed dial if I ever don't come home from one of the trips.
The sad part of that is you and I will probably be on that trip together. And then you're going to find out how fast an old man can really move, just a little bit faster than the guy behind me.
That's right.